Picture this. It's early summer, 1925. A young man is sitting in the open front of a war surplus biplane on a dirt field outside Fairbanks, Alaska. The engine in front of him is a big water-cooled Hispano-Suiza, what the old-timers just called a hisso. It's ticking and popping as it warms, throwing a little haze of castor oil and gasoline back over the cowling and straight into his face. There's no windshield worth the name, there's no radio, there's no map, not a real one, because nobody has ever flown where he is about to go. He's going to point the nose west, toward Nome, and he's going to fly across 500 miles of Alaska that has never once been seen from the air. And nobody, not one soul, knows if it can be done. Pull up a chair. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and today on the hangar we're going to talk about a man named Noel Wien and one flight that opened up a territory the size of a continent. Now, before we get rolling, let me tell you who's keeping the coffee hot this morning. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. And I got to thinking about that, because the fellow we're talking about today never had a coin for anything. He just had the flying. Every coin tells a story. Go find yours at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's get into it. Noel Wien was a Wisconsin farm kid, born 1899, up in the North Woods country. He learned to fly the way a lot of those early birds did, on a shoestring, barnstorming around the Midwest, taking folks up for a few dollars a ride, sleeping under the wing. He was quiet, shy even, didn't drink, didn't cuss much, didn't brag at all. If you'd met him at a fly-in breakfast, you might not have picked him out of the crowd, but he could fly. Lord, could he fly. In 1924, a Fairbanks businessman named Rode Baugh had this notion that airplanes could tie together the interior of Alaska. Now you've got to understand what Alaska was back then. There were no roads to speak of. If you wanted to get from one town to the next, you went by riverboat in the summer and by dog team in the winter, and either way you were measuring the trip in weeks. A doctor might be 200 miles from a dying man, and there was simply no way to get there in time. So Rode Baugh sent word out that he needed a pilot, a real one. Somebody crazy enough to come north and fly in a place with no airports, no weather reports, no fuel stops, and no help if anything went wrong. Noel Wien raised his hand. He came up to Fairbanks and he started flying that hisso standard, an open cockpit biplane, war surplus, the kind of airplane the country was practically giving away after the Great War. And right off the bat he started doing things nobody had done. He made the first flight from Anchorage to Fairbanks. He flew people and mail and medicine into little gold camps that had never heard an engine in the sky. Now here's where it gets interesting. In the summer of 1925, the challenge became Nome. Nome, way out on the Seward Peninsula, hard against the Bering Sea, 500 miles west of Fairbanks. In good conditions, by the fastest boat and portage anybody could manage, you were talking many days to get there, by dog team in winter, longer. Wien looked at that and figured he could do it in a day. But think about what that actually meant. He had no aeronautical charts, because none existed for that country. What he had were rough survey maps, the kind that showed a river here and a mountain range there and a whole lot of white space in between, with nothing written on it at all. He was going to navigate the way the riverboat captains did, by looking down and following the water, the Tanana, the Yukon. He'd trace those big rivers like they were highways, hold his heading with a compass, and hope the country matched the scribbles on his lap. He had no way to call for help. If that hisso quit over the bush, and those old water-cooled engines did quit, he was going down in spruce timber or tundra or a gravel bar, and whatever happened next, happened. Nobody would come. Nobody would even know where to look, and he was flying an open cockpit. So the wind and the cold and the bugs and the oil were all right there in his face for every single mile. Let me paint you the picture of that airplane, because I love these old machines and I want you to feel it. The hisso standard was a big, honest biplane. Two wings, wooden spars, fabric stretched tight over the ribs and doped until it drummed like a banjo when you thumped it. That Hispano-Suiza engine up front was a V8, water-cooled, and it did not purr, it hammered. A deep, hard, mechanical beat you felt in your chest and in your teeth. You smelled hot oil and hot copper and raw gasoline the whole flight. Your feet were on rudder that connected by cable and pulley straight to the tail. No hydraulics, no boost, just you and the wind arguing over where the airplane was going to point. And it was slow. You were loafing along at maybe 80, 90 miles an hour, sitting out in the open, watching Alaska crawl underneath you for hour after hour after hour. So Wien takes off from Fairbanks and he turns west, Now the first part he sort of knew, but pretty quick he's out past anything familiar, following the Yukon River as it swings and braids across the flats. And this is genuine wilderness, you have got to remember, from up there, there is no sign of human beings at all, no towns, no fences, no lights, just river and forest, and further west, the country opening up into tundra and low hills rolling out to a horizon that never seems to get any closer. He's watching that river like a hawk, because that river is the only thing standing between him and being completely, hopelessly lost over a landscape where every ridge looks like the last one. He's watching the water temperature on that hiso, because if she overheats out here, the story ends.
He's watching the light and the weather, because Alaska weather can go from clear and calm to a wall of gray in the time it takes to eat a sandwich, and there's no forecast, there's no controller, there's nobody to tell him what's coming over the next range, and he flies, hours in that open cockpit, cold seeping into his bones even in summer, the constant hammer of the engine, the smell of oil, the endless green and brown and silver sliding by below. And then finally, out ahead, the land runs out and turns to sea, the Bering Sea, gray and cold and enormous. And there on the coast is Nome, he'd done it. First man ever to fly from the interior of Alaska out to the Bering Coast. A trip that took days and weeks on the ground, and he'd flown it between breakfast and supper. Now the people of Nome had never seen an airplane. Some of them had never even heard of one showing up in their sky. And when that hiso came droning in over the town and Ween set her down, folks came running from every direction. It was, for that country, a little like a spaceship landing. This thing had come out of the sky from a place they could only reach by weeks of hard travel, and it had done it in an afternoon. And Noel Ween, being Noel Ween, probably just climbed down, wiped the oil off his goggles, and started thinking about the trip home. That's the kind of man he was. Here's what I want you to understand, and this is the part that gives me chills every time. That one flight wasn't a stunt, it wasn't a race, it wasn't a record for a trophy. It was a demonstration. He was proving that the airplane could shrink Alaska. That a place the size of a third of the lower 48, with almost no roads, could be knitted together by men and flying machines. And once he proved it, everything changed. Because Noel Ween went on to build an airline, Ween Alaska Airways. One of the oldest airlines in the whole country, and for a long stretch of the 20th century, one of the most important. His brothers came up and flew with him. His sons flew. The Ween name flew mail and medicine and miners and mothers and sick children across that territory for decades. He kept setting firsts, too. He was, by most accounts, the first man to fly across the Arctic Circle in Alaska. He pushed north and west into country that was blank on the map, again and again, and every time he came back he'd drawn in a little more of it. And in 1929, he made one of the first commercial flights between North America and Asia, hopping across the Bering Strait to the Siberian coast. That effort was tied up with hauling a fortune in furs off a ship frozen into the ice, and it cost the life of another great pilot, Carl Ben Eielson, who went down in a storm on that same run. That country never gave anything up for free, but it was that Nome flight, that first long reach into the unknown in an open biplane with a river for a map, that really lit the fuse. Now, I'll be honest with you, I get a little grumpy sometimes about how easy we've got it, and I don't say that to run anybody down. I love that a student pilot today can put a tablet on the yoke and see their little airplane crawling across a moving map, every tower, every ridge, every restricted area laid out in living color. That's wonderful. That saves lives. I'd never take it away from anybody. But I want you to sit for just a second with what Noel Ween did without any of it. No map, no radio, no engine that anybody trusted farther than they could see it, no airport, no forecast, no rescue, just a compass, a river, a good pair of eyes, and the nerve to point the nose at 500 miles of country nobody had ever flown and go find out.
That's not recklessness. That's the opposite. That's a man who knew his airplane and his own hands so well that he could stake his life on both. Every pilot listening knows the difference between the two, and Ween was all the way over on the right side of it. Back when AVGAS was cheap and airspace was free, the whole map still had blank spots on it, and it took men and women like Noel Ween to fill them in one flight at a time. They were the ones who turned Nobody's Ever Flown There into the 1215 to Nome. And I don't think we ought to ever forget their names. Noel Ween flew for something like 50 years. He died in 1977. And there's a little grace note to all this that I love. That quiet Wisconsin farm boy who scared a whole town half to death just by landing his airplane, he became known all across the North as the Dean of Alaskan Bush Pilots. The one the younger fellows measured themselves against, and he earned every bit of it not by being the boldest, but by being the steadiest. He brought the airplane home over and over and over again, for half a century. In the hardest flying country on the planet, he brought it home.
If you want to dig into all this, the Alaska Aviation Museum up in Anchorage keeps his story alive, and there are fine accounts written by the Ween family themselves that go far deeper than I can in 20 minutes. Go read them. You'll be glad you did. You can always find us at RadioHangar.com. So next time you're bumping along in your own airplane following a river just because it's prettier than the Magenta Line, think of that Hisso standard droning west into the empty country, oil on the goggles, a whole territory waiting to be drawn. That's the good stuff. That's why we fly. I'm Taildragger. Keep the greasy side down, and I'll see you back here in the hangar.